Good morning. We're not actually listed in any detail in the program, so you have no idea what we're going to talk about, but I'm going to pick up where she left off. Finishing with a policy change is where we're going to start, and really the title of my presentation is Speaking Truth to Power and Getting the Results You Want. How many of you advocate in some fashion or another? And I want to see everybody's hands, because my sense is if you're not raising your hand, you will be, particularly as we look at diminishing resources. So I'm going to review the findings from a multi-year evaluation we've been doing on the Clinic Consortia Policy and Advocacy Program funded by the California Endowment. And first of all, I'd like to acknowledge my co-presenter, Sarah. Could you just thank you. Nothing to disclose, no conflict of interest, and a little bit of background on the program. Launched in 2001 and refunded a couple of times in 2004 and 2007, roughly $9 million per round. And the entities or organizations funded under this grant include 14 local or regional clinic consortia and 4 statewide clinic associations, representing roughly 700 primary care clinics in California. How many are from California? Okay. How many are in any way related with FQHCs or clinic consortia? Fabulous. For the rest of you, think about a clinic consortia would be most like your primary care association in your state. It's part advocacy or interest group, also an entity that can launch quite a few programmatic expansions in clinics or on their own. In fact, they can be vehicles for some of the initiatives you've heard today. The goals of this program was to increase services to underserved populations through consortia-initiated policy and advocacy activities. And by advocacy, we're not talking about lobbying. We're talking about a lot of other activities that organizations can engage in. They all get called educating policymakers, which can include media advocacy, policy forums, action alerts, mobilizing clinics and their patients, training patients to be better advocates. The second goal is to increase access through improved efficiencies within clinic organizations. The second arm of the program was to provide technical assistance to clinics in a number of areas like HIPAA compliance, quality improvement, expanding their IT. Here's our logic model, and the short version is basically expanding grantee capacity in the area of advocacy to increase support by decision makers, who then in turn would be more supportive of clinic policy issues like Medi-Cal funding, and which in turn would go back down to clinics and their target populations, expanding their operations, their quality of care, and thus increasing services for the uninsured, and ultimately, we hope, improved health outcomes at the community level. We've been very busy for the last 6 years, and I'm not going to read through the whole slide, but basically our design has been to have 4 longitudinal or annual data collection tools on advocacy capacity, funding secured, policies targeted, and partnerships. We've supplemented that with interviews with decision makers. It's really good to talk to the folks that you're trying to influence. We've also had pre and post with interviews with the media. We've talked to clinics quite a bit as well. And we're wrapping up the evaluation and focusing more on case studies, where we actually bring together all the activities and achievements under this grant into comprehensive, compelling stories. Who mentioned talking story? Because that's an important component of our evaluation. I'm going to report our findings by outcome as listed in our logic model, the first one being around expanding grantee advocacy capacity. And what we find in some is that it's about expanding and innovating. It's really a toolkit. And many times you add to the tool and you strengthen the tool. You may deepen the toolkit in the sense that you can cover deeper into a policy arena or across multiple policy arenas. So what we found is in our counting, on our quantitative data, that grantees expanded the number and type of advocacy activities that they engaged from 73% to 86% from 2002 to 2006. they're very consistent. And what's not only that, but they're also, they can wear multiple hats. They targeted both the federal, with about 80% of their, 60% at the federal level and 80% at local and state levels. They're also involved across the policymaking model, as we describe it. They're involved early on around planning and mobilizing, and they're also very involved through the implementation side. Also, we found that when it comes to capacity, newer organizations can get up to speed quickly in terms of their ability to engage in effective advocacy. And I've got some figures that show all this. And you can see that actually where we see a lot of gains in capacity are around our local consortia. So a local consortia would be in the city and county of San Francisco acting on behalf of the community clinics. And we have them broken out in, 14 counties, but that's what we mean by local. We also like to parse out or figure out what in the toolkit of advocacy activities is more effective than other activities, and actually they're all pretty consistent, and I've only put on this slide the three that showed the most change over the 4 years. And as I mentioned, we're seeing increased involvement throughout the policymaking process, and we look at drafting rules and regulations as an area of growing activity. Interestingly, the engaging in an informal contact seems to be declining slightly, and we think that's being replaced with a lot more aggressive formal engagement around participating on committees with decision makers, contacting them directly, and engaging more in a partnership effort. And then we've been following media advocacy quite a bit and it's constantly rated lower than the other advocacy activities, and we have a whole other talk about media advocacy that I won't go into today. As I indicated, newer grantees came up to speed quite quickly, and they are the yellow line going up, and in part that's about staffing, bringing in really qualified folks who know the policy arena, have the contacts, have the expertise. Outcome two, making sure that your decision makers know about your issues and problems, agenda setting, and in this case around safety net and clinic policy issues. And what we find here is when you talk to decision makers, in this case, the decision makers targeted by grantees were fairly well informed about their activities and considered them very effective, 74%, compared to the stakeholders who were thought to be less known to grantees, which is 61%, which actually is pretty reasonable. The other thing we looked at is the effectiveness of media advocacy, a particular strategy, and it comes off fairly well with the more known policymakers, around 60% effectiveness, and stakeholders, a little less, around 42%. Now, to the grantee and probably to most of you, you think everything you do speaks truth to power, and interestingly, that probably is true, and what's tougher, though, is to get to the point where that speaking truth actually results in a policy change or it affects funding. And when we ask grantees to what extent their activities did this, you can tell that, yes, we think we're good at educating policymakers, but not all of our activities are resulting in the outcomes that we desire. The money question. So we've got to get somewhere with our work. We track, it's a return on investment analysis, and we do track the role of the grant in securing funding through advocacy and grant writing. And what we found is that they did very well on this point, securing $2.9 billion over the course of the program, which 35% or $979 million could be attributable to this particular grant. We'll see a nice rise from $104 million in 2001 to $226 million in 2007. And then actually what we're interested in is, that's all fine and good, but what are you doing to diversify your funding? How are you leveraging your position? How are you getting ready for new sources of funding? And that they are, in fact, doing well, particularly around IT. And then we like to tease our funding apart to see what plays a more important role than others. And actually, they're fairly close. But what's interesting to us is that the local or county-level funding is an increasingly important funding stream for our grantees. You'll probably hear a lot about that, you know, going local. So here's a figure that sums up that and gives you a nice sense of things increasing for the most part with a few dips and valleys. The bottom set of bars is what goes to the consortia. The majority of this goes to clinics, 90%, and about 10% to consortia. But what's fun is to take your line apart and look at the funding streams that comprise it, and then stand back and reflect on the policy environment. And these lines that go up and down and peaks and valleys have different stories to them. The local one, this green one that goes up, rises up, is really about positioning yourself around county contracts. The federal line, which has little peaks and valleys, is really about 330 clinic funding. And clinics have done fairly well under the Bush administration with the 330 expansion grants. And then the state funding is very episodic, and you can map onto it particular legislation. In this case, the Cedillo-Alarcon legislation that was for clinic facility expansions. And then private funding foundation support stays constant. Again, just a summary slide is that the federal leads, but slightly, with local coming from behind just a little bit. We like to look at the legislation on an annual basis. We do a lot of counting in this evaluation, but I'm going to go pass on to the slide here, which tells you, in terms of capacity, these folks are really good at both targeting the federal and the state level and have been fairly successful in securing legislative wins, more so at the state level, but that would make a lot of sense. I mean, and what's interesting is that the model is it's not just the statewide organizations that target state legislation, it's also they work in tandem in a coordinated way with the county and regional folks. We like to look on an annual basis at all the policies, at what's passed, what's not passed, and just to get a sense of the diversity, I won't go through all of these. I just want to give you a picture of what type of data we collect to see how things are going. But what we really like to do is drill down in particular policies, and we're very interested in the local site and what can you achieve. And we have two cases, one with passage of a Measure A in Alameda County, and securing of dollars funded under the Mental Health Services Act. And what we have is, what we see is a measure is really tough to pass at the local level. It takes two-thirds. It's a stretch. But these folks in Alameda County prevailed and were part of a collaborative effort that resulted in good funding, $16.8 million over 3 years to those member clinics in that county. The Mental Health Services Act funding, which is a recent funding source and involves a major planning effort county by county, is a place where local entities can really get to the table and influence the allocation process. And in the two counties that we've looked at so far, we've seen 8.6 allocated to clinics over 3 years. So we've looked at, well, what is it that really contributes to success in these areas? And this is sort of our take-home points for today. Having the staff expertise, and it's not just about advocacy, it's also about knowing how to develop allocation formulas, it's about networking, it's about coalition building. The other one is being involved early and often. Your constant presence from the beginning to the end, and there is no end. You'll be assessing the implementation of whatever it is you've been involved with. Being able to work with your clinic staff and patients in building coalitions. This is not a solo enterprise. And last, working with your membership, and in this case it's with member clinics, who bring considerable expertise to the table already and have the political connections. The last outcome that I'm going to report on is what happens at the clinic level. And what we see is that, as I mentioned earlier, 90% of the funding goes to clinics, so there's that benefit. What we also have been seeing is that the clinic consortia can do a lot around engaging clinics in advocacy. And I don't mean just taking your clinic patients in a bus today at the Capitol in Sacramento. I mean training a cadre of clinic patients to speak truth to power, to be able to speak with their decision makers. Because one of the things that's finally surfacing is that your policymakers don't want to hear from you. They want to hear from your constituents. Those constituents have very good stories to tell. They just need help in learning how to tell that story effectively. The other thing that we've seen around quality improvement is that the clinic consortia, in addition to the advocacy piece, are very good at mobilizing clinics to engage in what we call shared projects, projects that cut across multiple clinics. And you know, quality improvement in IT, it's a lot of work, it's a lot of effort, even if there is a lot of funding. It's quite an undertaking, but they have been successful in mobilizing clinics to be involved. And what we're interested in is, when do you take your data and put it into your fact sheets, have it delivered to your decision makers in a way that they can really grok it or understand what you're talking about when it comes to quality of care in a clinic setting? So I'll wrap up here. Basically, we think we've got good evidence of achievement of our first program outcomes. We see sustained advocacy capacity. We also see that really they're making a difference in educating their policymakers, that this education is translating into support for clinic policies that result in funding to clinics, and that these are important policy wins benefiting clinics, and not just around funding, but program expansions, new programs, and the like. And we think we have good evidence of achievement of the longer-term outcomes, and this is the direction we're heading with our case studies, is to look at clinic service expansions, but look to see how they're benefiting the patients that are being served, as well as see to what extent we're making a difference around the uninsured. And last, we're stepping back and realizing that this program has helped us see these particular grantees as agents of systems change in their communities. It's not just about the clinic, it's about what they can achieve throughout the community, through new partnerships, through partnering with decision makers more effectively. And I'm going to wrap up my talk with a slide that illustrates, I think, a little better, a little less abstract, what this program has afforded the clinic consortia in California. And I've got the logic model at the lower step up to the top step. And I've put in here the various types of initiatives that we've been developing case studies about. And at the bottom, we have two clinic consortia that have done a lot to expand their capacity, be it using economic data to inform local decision making, and then up through each step in terms of the next step around increased awareness. We had one consortia that has regular TV coverage around key health issues in their community in LA County. Around increased policymaker support for clinic funding, we see policy efforts such as averting cuts to Title X funding, developing research infrastructure to inform policymaking. Around strengthened clinic operations, we see that our CPCA, our Primary Care Association, has been very involved with Clinic Emergency Preparedness Project that cuts across the state and increases clinic capacity in this arena. Around increased services for the underserved and uninsured, we've had a couple of grantees use this funding to be involved with their children's health initiatives to expand health care insurance to uninsured children. Also quite a bit of work around HPSA designations. And then the last step is to be determined. This is where our next round of cases will lead us. And the reason we have our little torchbearers here is to give you a sense of how dynamic a process this is. At the same time that you're going up the stairs and towards the latter part, you're still also expanding capacity in new areas. As I said, I think that the patient advocacy piece is a growing area of involvement for many of our grantees. So that's it. We've actually been also very busy in putting a lot of our work into helpful information packets, and I'm happy to share that with you. I put some flyers out on the back table because basically our study is like lots of icebergs, and I've just sort of hopped from tip to tip to give you a sense of what we've been doing. But our real goal here is to create products that have some usefulness to advocates and their constituents. Thank you.
Okay, we have a few minutes for questions for anyone. Okay.